This is Dave Lapper, and you're listening to the Home of the Bengals, ESPN 1530.
Hey, what's up? I'm Mo Egger. This is ESPN 1530. Thank you for listening. I just pulled one of the biggest jerk moves, maybe the biggest jerk move a radio host can pull on my producer. And I know this because I was a producer off and on for about 10 years. For the better part of really 9 years. I produced shows. Much like Taryn, I produced good shows. Taryn stuck with me. We go on at like 4 after, 5 after, depending on the inventory, as we call it. At 3:02, I decided I'm thirsty. And I got up to get a drink. And that is the single worst thing you could do to your producer who's like, wait a minute, where's the host? Where are they? What am I going to do? What's going to happen? And he reacted to it with complete and total calm and professionalism. Thank God for that. Thank you so much for listening. We have just a ton to get to today. We're going to chat with Anthony Treisch from Pro Football Focus, who has been on this show before. He's going to join us in 15 minutes. He has a 2-round mock draft. And I'm less interested in mock drafts maybe this year than others, but what he writes about Penei Sewell is kind of interesting to me. And so I've tweeted out a link. We'll chat with Anthony about the Bengals and the draft and his mock draft, all that coming up in about 15 minutes. Plus, you'll hear John Brannon, the Bearcats, trying to bounce back tonight. I'm going to compare UC basketball to Andy Dalton, at least this evening. Cincinnati is at Tulsa. Xavier on the road tonight, taking on Providence. I think I have a new favorite Musketeer. We'll talk about him and his teammates and NKU basketball with Rick Broering, MusketeerReport.com, coming up at 3:45. Rick, obviously also the color man on NKU radio broadcast. The Norse awaiting their first-round opponent, or I should say quarterfinal-round opponent in the Horizon League tournament, which gets underway tomorrow. Some Reds in the next hour as well. We have a lot to get to today. I want to spend just a few minutes, though. I want to talk a little bit about me, which is not something I love talking about, but I'm going to tie it into the radio show, and I'm going to tie it into the big story in sports at least yesterday, and I think, frankly, today as well. So, like at 2:40, 2:30 yesterday, the story came out that Tiger Woods was involved in a car accident, single car crash. And right before we go on, Paul Daner Jr. is here with me for the first hour on Tuesdays. Right before we go on, I see a photo that I'm sure, if you care, you've seen by now, of Tiger Woods' car that literally looks like the front of it just spilled out, right? It's mangled, it's gnarly, it looked awful. Like, if you're passing that on the highway, if you see that on the side of the road, something that looks like that, you are fearing the worst. And so, we're doing the show yesterday, at least like the first two and a half hours, and you know, from my standpoint, there's not a lot to say. You don't know what's going to happen. So it was, I felt a small responsibility, just reflect what I'm hearing and seeing and what's out there and pass it along to the audience. But I didn't know we needed to make Tiger Woods a topic on, you know, outlets like ESPN and CNN. They have to, but there's really not a lot to say. And so I look up and they're chatting with Curtis Strange and Scott Van Pelt, who I'm sure are offering great golf perspective, but frankly, in that moment, golf perspective is really not what's needed. But I'm doing the show, and I'm fearing, I think like a lot of people did, I'm fearing the worst, and I'm going, okay, not that I'm going to be the voice of record for this, but at some point between now and 6 o'clock, the news comes out that something terrible, that something fatal has happened to Tiger Woods. I'm going to have to announce that he passed away, and that I remember the only thing I could think of was I was on the air the afternoon that the story came out. I think it was like 3 minutes before the show ended. In December of 2009, Chris Henry had been involved in an auto accident. And all we had heard was it was awful and the injuries were severe. And it was like 5:55. I'll never forget. It was right before Christmas. I went to a relative of mine's like Christmas recital that night, and I'm like, you know, sitting here, it's a couple minutes before the show ends, this Chris Henry story comes out, and I just remember kind of conveying it to the audience and having this sinking feeling in the pit of my stomach, and it was kind of the same thing all afternoon yesterday, that at some point I'm going to have to announce that something awful has happened to somebody who is a sports and an American icon. Say what you want about the guy, but he is. And so, thankfully, the news is certainly not good, but it's not as bad as a lot of us feared. But just driving home, I hate to say exhausted, because let's face it, we're not exactly talking about the most mind-bending or physically demanding work that I do. But I drove home and I was exhausted, I think in large part because I was on edge navigating the fun and games of the normal stuff we're talking about in the Reds and the Bengals and UC Xavier, John Brannan. We played a game called Who's Bad Is That and all that stuff. Meanwhile, I'm keeping an eye on what's happening with Tiger Woods because I legitimately feared the worst. And I feared, far less important, obviously, I feared having to express the worst to you, to my audience. So I was very relieved that that's not something I had to talk about yesterday, and I'm very relieved that this is that's not something I am compelled to talk about today. I will say this, though. Golf is obviously not the most important component of all this. His quality of life, what happens to his lower extremities and how they impact his ability to just go about his daily life, all that's far more important. But for a guy who for about 12 years seemed to be invincible, I'll never forget the first golf tournament that I ever watched that I was invested in the outcome. I'd watched golf my whole life, but where I was invested in the outcome was the 08 U.S. Open that he won basically on one leg, beating Rocco Mediate, which is covered in the recently released Tiger Woods documentary on HBO, which is pretty good. And at that moment, June of 08, he is 33 years old. He's about to be 33 years old. The guy, it felt like he was invincible. Felt like he was invincible. And just the roller coaster of events from 09 to now has been incredible to watch. And I don't say that with trying to be flippant or anything. It's been insane to watch from, obviously, the car crash in 2009, the sex scandal, all the different back surgeries, including one he had just had in December, attempted comebacks, aborted comebacks, tournaments where he didn't make the cut, a tournament where he left around after 11 holes, the arrest for suspicion of DUI, the subsequent photos and video that came out from that, and then the redemption of him coming back and winning the Masters in 2019 to now this. It's been remarkable to watch, and I've enjoyed very little of it, quite frankly. I've enjoyed very little of it, and, you know, it's like I hate to do this, but as a baseball fan, as a kid who grew up with Ken Griffey Jr. in his life, that dude was obviously a clear-cut first ballot Hall of Famer. There's still three people who didn't vote for him, but there was no denying that guy. You look at his numbers, the moment he was done playing, you knew specifically when he was going to be inducted into Cooperstown. You knew that. You knew when it was going to be. And yet it is hard to process his entire career and not ask, what if, not wonder what kind of career, what kind of individual accomplishments, and to a large degree, what kind of team accomplishments we would have been talking about if the second half of his career he would have been injury-free. Maybe if he would have been on a better team. Maybe if he would have, I don't know, taken better care of himself. Whatever it is, you can't help it. And you hate to do that. And I feel something similar, although not totally the same. I feel something similar here about Tiger Woods. And honestly, the scandal and the issue with him and his ex-wife, I never got too caught up in that. That to me was between him and his family. It didn't make me root for him any more or less. But what's just happened to him from a health perspective, much of which is golf-related. What happened to him yesterday is obviously not golf-related. You know, who knows what his next golf chapter was, and who knows how much that's been altered by what happened yesterday. I don't know. He was a guy coming off back surgery. I watched the Genesis Invitational this week where, you know, he kind of talked about his frustrations and trying to come back, and he wants to come back and play competitive golf. I also, though, I thought of when he won the Masters, I keep wanting to say last year. It was 2019. Feels like forever ago. He won the Masters, 2019 Masters, which, if you remember, rain screwed up the whole tournament, so they basically finished the part of it that mattered in the morning. And I remember, as somebody who's a casual golf fan and who was brought to the sport by and because of Tiger Woods, man, I had never been on a golf course in my life until I watched him win the 97 Masters going away. But I remember watching that, and there was this, I think, knee-jerk impulse to kind of default to Tiger's back. Can he catch Jack? How many more can he win? Can he get to number 19? And I get it, but I remember saying, look, tap the brakes on that and understand the improbability of what he just did. Understand the unlikelihood of what he just did and savor that moment, because the odds of it being repeated, the odds of it being the beginning of something are not very good. He's defied the odd once. Who knows if he's ever going to be able to do it again? Savor this comeback. 11 years between major championships. Now, we wouldn't have known. We had no way of knowing that he was going to be in a horrific car accident. Again, who knows what that's going to mean for his golf career. But I kind of went back to how I felt watching that Sunday morning, April of 2019. I think it might have been the day we found out John Brandon was going to be UC's basketball coach. I remember watching that and just thinking, in the moment, forget what's next. Who knows what's going to happen next? Who knows? Dude's had a bunch of back surgeries. He's older. Who knows what's going to happen? Savor this instead of worrying about what it's going to mean for the future. And I'm glad I did that, and I hope I can watch him play golf again. More than anything, I hope he's okay. And, again, doing the show yesterday, not exactly a hardship, but I'm talking to Paul, and we're doing Bengals and Reds and all this stuff, and I'm keeping an eye on that going, I really don't want to have to announce to my audience that Tiger Woods has been killed. Unfortunately, I didn't have to do it, and barring something unforeseen, it doesn't look like I will have to do that. 16 minutes after 3, my name's Mo Egger. Our phone numbers are 513-749-1530, 866-702-3776. We're getting into mock draft season, and I'm going to do a lot of this mock draft stuff after free agency, because free agency comes first, and free agency is going to impact, I think, drastically how we talk about and approach the draft. Nonetheless, I like Anthony Treisch's work, Pro Football Focus. He has a 2-round mock draft up. What he writes about Penei Sewell is interesting to me, and if you're a Bengals fan, I think it's going to be interesting to you. So we'll talk with Anthony next on ESPN 1530, Cincinnati Sports Station. Among those 30 million. 21 minutes after 3, this is ESPN 1530. Why? My name's Mo Egger. So, we haven't had anybody on yet who's done a mock draft, but I was drawn to the one by Anthony Treisch for two reasons. Three. He's a college football analyst, so he's a little bit more familiar with the players he's mock drafting than a lot of people doing this. Number two, he's done a 2-round mock draft, and especially when you have a team that's drafting near the top, I think sometimes that's a little bit more interesting. Three, or C, I found what he wrote about Penei Sewell to be interesting, so I wanted to bring Anthony in. I have linked to his mock draft, by the way, on my Twitter feed, at MoEgger1530. And Anthony is on Twitter, at PFF underscore. Anthony, I appreciate the time this afternoon. Anthony, how are you?
Doing well. How are you doing?
I am really, really well. I want to go back to the end of last year. The Bengals actually stumble into a couple of victories. They beat the Steelers on Monday Night Football. They go to Houston. They beat the Texans, who are defensively at least awful. And the instant reaction by many is, damn it, see? Now they're not going to take Penei Sewell, and yet, you know, I'm like, look, at some point you got to start winning football games. They did. In 2 months, I guarantee you somebody's not going to want to take Penei Sewell. You have arrived not wanting the Bengals to take Penei Sewell, so thank you.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was really a blessing in disguise, really, just because, I mean, I think realistically, so the mock draft I did was under what I would do if I were in the shoes of all 32 NFL decision makers there. And I had Penei Sewell falling all the way down to 11 to New York, which there's absolutely no chance that happens. I really do think that the scenario that will play out will the Atlanta Falcons will trade up from 4 to 3, like we saw Chicago do a few years ago with Mitchell Trubisky, just because, I mean, you have Philadelphia, Carolina, Denver, even San Francisco, all these teams that could possibly trade up with Miami for that number 3 pick. It's just the quarterback to me, and there's so much there that I think Atlanta might get baited into trading up one spot for that. And then I think Penei Sewell will go to Miami there. And then hopefully that actually does happen, because I think that is the best case scenario for Cincinnati, just because Jamar Chase, I think, in the long run is going to generate more value than Penei Sewell does. And when you look at the free agency market this year, I mean, Cincinnati has they're in a pretty good cap situation, and they're one of the few teams that can honestly say that they can afford to pay big bucks for a few different guys. I mean, they're going to bring back William Jackson and Carl Lawson, I presume. And then, two, you have Joe Thuney, possibly bring him back home to plug in at left guard. He's going to probably cost somewhere around $14 million per year, if I had to guess. And then, two, bringing in a low-cost guy, whether that's like a Kelvin Beachum or Matt Filer, to plug in at right tackle, take a tackle in round two, because you're going to get a first-round caliber tackle at that, because this is a very deep tackle class. And then you get a guy like Jamar Chase, who I think is, from a prospect perspective, on that same tier as, you know, Julio Jones. I mean, this guy's going to be, I think, a star receiver, I mean, every single year, top five type of guy, just because, I mean, you can't really find a, you know, noticeable flaw with him. I mean, there's been, you can kind of throw one out there, but it's nitpicky and no one's going to agree with it. I mean, everything you want at the position, he has. And plus, it just with Joe Burrow and Jamar Chase, the reunion there, I mean, that's just the cherry on top. I mean, those guys formed one of the best, if not the best, quarterback wide receiver connection in college football history a couple years ago. So, I mean, the Bengals have a good opportunity this offseason. It's just whether or not they feel that same way and they execute on that.
Stay on Penei Sewell here with me, because that's been a guy that folks have been fixated on since before the season ended. And it's worth pointing out, you do have him in your mock draft falling to 11, what you would do. At the same time, you do describe him as, quote, a generational tackle. Be a little bit more specific when you watch him on film, because most folks who have talked about him haven't seen him play it down. He didn't play college football last year. Give me specifically what you like.
Yeah, I mean, right away, you notice the athleticism. I mean, the movement skills that he has on him is truly, I mean, remarkable. I think he's going to come in right away and be a star tackle. And, you know, I think he's a very safe option there. And I struggle with this one just because, you know, in the top nine picks I had there, you know, like I said, this was under the assumption that I would make the decision for all 32 teams. I think there are five quarterbacks that should be taken within the first nine picks, which is kind of unpopular because Mac Jones is, I mean, you see some people that are all over the map on him, but I do think he's a, you know, first nine pick type of talent. Then the three wide receivers too, Jamar Chase, Devonta Smith, and Jalen Waddle there. And then you have guys like Penei Sewell, who, like you said, is a generational tackle. I really do think he is. I mean, he shattered the PFF grading system a couple of years ago with a 95.8 PFF grade. I mean, nobody even sniffed that for that season or anything before that. And, you know, he's going to come in and provide value, whether that's run blocking or pass protection. And he would keep Joe Burrow clean. I don't think it wouldn't obviously be a bad thing because, like I said, I do think he's going to be a star. But, you know, there is a ceiling on how much value you can generate in our wonderful data scientists at PFF have developed a metric called WAR, wins above replacement, which is very popular in baseball. And, you know, we found that the tackle position is nowhere near as valuable as a position like wide receiver. And there's just the ceilings between a guy like Sewell and Chase are just so drastic there. So, you know, while I do think he's a generational talent, and I think, you know, you could probably throw Micah Parsons, maybe even Kyle Pitts. I think Caleb Farley's kind of friends there, but those guys are exceptional prospects. But, you know, even though he's sliding there to 11, that's really no slight to him. I think he's going to be a stud in the NFL.
You mentioned what they could do in free agency, and obviously that comes first. And everybody here is obviously hopeful the Bengals make their offensive line better in free agency. If they whiff during that process, how much does that change your thinking about Penei Sewell?
Yeah, it would definitely change it. You know, I just based off of the history of some of the decisions they've made, I really would not be surprised if they left free agency without getting a, you know, standout offensive lineman. Like I said, Joe Thuney makes a lot of sense. I mean, everything's pointing to that being the guy that they bring in. But I will be interested to see what kind of, you know, what New England offers them, because they, too, have a lot of cap space to utilize. So if they do whiff, then I think it becomes a little bit more murky. And I think, you know, taking Penei Sewell over Jamar Chase, you could probably convince me that that might be the better option. But even though, you know, as today stands, I really do think that they should plan for the long term to not take Penei Sewell and take one of those lower cost value plays for right tackle, and then Jonah Williams too and Trey Hopkins at center. I mean, that's a pretty good connection there. And ahead, Tevin Jenkins, who they were taking in round two, and even him, he's going to be interesting to watch just because he may not be, you know, a tackle at the next level. We think he can hold up at tackle, but his arm length is a little concerning. He may have to kick inside, but even then, the Bengals could still use him. I think he's going to be another two quality starting offensive linemen, whether it is at tackle or guard. I do think there's a very good blueprint for him. But if they don't make any of those plays, whether, you know, it's Joe Thuney or if they're picking up one of those low cost, you know, budget free agents, like I was mentioning with Kelvin Beachum and Matt Filer, who they're not the best run blockers, but they can, you know, protect the passer, and that's just what they need. They need to have Joe Burrow, give him some time to throw for a change, don't have those quick losses. You know, like I said, the blueprint's right there for him.
Anthony Treisch, Pro Football Focus. He is on Twitter at PFF underscore Anthony. His two-round mock draft is available now, pff.com. I have a direct link on my Twitter feed, at MoEgger1530. All right, let's talk about Ja'Marr Chase specifically, and I want you to tell me why him instead of another guy that has been on the tips. His name has been on the tips of a lot of Bengals fans' tongues over the last couple of weeks, and that would be Kyle Pitts.
Yeah, you know, I love Kyle Pitts. You know, I had him in this mock falling to 12, and yeah, I kind of hated him falling all the way to 12, but then you think about what they could have with San Francisco there with George Kittle, Debo Samuel, Brandon Ayuk, and then you have Kyle Shanahan's mind in there. That would just be dangerous. I mean, Kyle Pitts is really – he's not really your prototypical tight end. He's kind of Darren Waller-esque. He can win on the outside against press man coverage. We saw him do it against, you know, J.C. Horn of South Carolina, who's probably going to get taken, you know, in later on in the first round of this upcoming draft. I mean, he's going to be a dangerous weapon. You know, people have been knocking his blocking. I think it's improved. I don't think it's that big of an issue. Yeah, I think if for some reason, too, if they go down this route, and let's say they do pick up Joe Thuney, pick up another tackle in free agency with their mindset is on Ja'Marr Chase. But say Miami would take Ja'Marr Chase, which is possible. I don't think it would happen. And then at that point, I think Kyle Pitts or Devonta Smith, either one, I would be happy with. I think he's up there as a prospect, one of the best we've seen at the position over the last few years, broke the PFF record for tight end receiving grade and PFF grade, and that's going back the last 7 years since we started PFF college. So, you know, I think if for some reason Ja'Marr Chase is not there, then I think Kyle Pitts is probably a good option to have. But if comparing the two and Ja'Marr Chase is still on the board, I think you take him 10 times out of 10.
Awesome stuff, man. I really appreciate the time. We'll do it again before the draft, man. Thanks so much.
Of course, thanks for having me.
That's Anthony Treisch, Pro Football Focus. He is college football analyst, good two-round mock draft, up at PFF.com. And again, I've tweeted out a link at MoEgger, 1530, 29 minutes away from 4 o'clock. Rick Broering on XU and NKU Hoops coming up in just about 15 minutes. The Musketeers in Providence tonight to take on Ed Cooley's Friars. UC Bearcats back at it tonight in Tulsa, trying to bounce back after getting drilled by 38. This game reminds me of Andy Dalton, or at least it could. I will explain next on ESPN 1530 Cincinnati Sports Station. Sports updates, a service of Kelsey Chevrolet, home of lifetime powertrain protection and guaranteed credit approval from their family to yours for life. Go to KelseyChev.com. By the way, we were talking about Tiger Woods before. The L.A. County Sheriff says Tiger Woods was, quote, not drunk during the car accident that sent him to the hospital and to the surgeon's table yesterday. L.A. County Sheriff Alex Villanueva says his department will not be filing any charges pertaining to the crash, which occurred about 30 miles south of downtown L.A. Did you get the sense yesterday that, you know, it came out that they didn't believe that Tiger was impaired? And look, he, you know, was arrested for suspicion of DUI a few years ago. But did you get the sense when the news kind of came out that there was no impairment, did you get the sense there were folks working in media who were a little disappointed not to be able to report that he was impaired and not be able to talk about how he was impaired? Instead, operator error, who knows what else was at play. Going to go ahead and speculate speed, I guess. But as of now, no charges filed. College basketball tonight, busy night locally in Oklahoma. The UC Bearcats are at Tulsa. That game is on at 9 p.m. tonight. Pregame at 8:30 on 700 WLW. Xavier's at Providence. Second time this year these two teams have played. The Friars are 11-11. The Musketeers won the first matchup on a shot at the buzzer by Colby Jones. Dayton's at St. Joseph's. Indiana's at Rutgers. Hoosiers a mess in their last game against Michigan State over the weekend, giving up 52 second-half points. Big opportunity for the Hoosiers to take a step toward the NCAA tournament. For the UC Bearcats, tonight is not necessarily a step toward the NCAA tournament, but if you want to know a lot about a group of guys, if you want to know a lot about a program, if you want to know a lot about a coaching staff, watch and pay attention to Cincinnati tonight because, all right, fine, look, they got smoked on Sunday. And let's be honest, they're not as good as Houston. If those two teams played 10 times, I'm going to pick Houston 9. And then the 10th time, I'm probably also then going to change my mind and pick Houston. They're better. They're better across the board. They're bigger. They're more experienced. They're more physical. They're better. Let's be honest. When you looked at the schedule, maybe coming out of the layoff, the 25-day layoff, and frankly, probably even before then, regardless of where that game was played, you probably had that chalked up as a loss. I certainly did. Vegas thought the Bearcats were going to lose by more than 13 points. 13.5 to 14.5, depending on your book. So we knew they were going to lose that game. Now, was it painful? Was it embarrassing? Did it cause reexamination of the program losing by 38 points? Yeah. I mean, again, I hold the program in high enough esteem that losing by 38 points to a conference foe is not something I find acceptable. By the way, I'm sure John Brannon himself doesn't find it acceptable, but it happened. And there are occasions where you just get smoked. Louisville. And Chris Mack, I think, is a really good coach. Louisville, which has had COVID issues this year, including Chris Mack, just got smoked by a okay North Carolina team, lost by 45 points. Should that happen at U of L? No, it shouldn't, but it did. Interested in how the bounce back goes. Interested in how tonight goes for the Bearcats. How do they respond? That, as cliche and as corny as it sounds, I think often is more revealing than just losing a lopsided game to a team that's simply better. Tonight they're playing a Tulsa team that, frankly, did beat Houston earlier this year, but in the grand scheme of things is very part of the large, large middle of the American Athletic Conference. It is a beatable opponent for a team that recently has beaten a lot of beatable opponents. I'd say they haven't lost a game to a beatable opponent since January 10th, which is something that owes itself to the layoff. How do you respond? How do they respond to themselves? How do they respond to their coaching? By the way, Louisville, for what it's worth, against a very okay Notre Dame team, maybe didn't play great last night, but bounced back. Didn't look like there was a 45-point loss hangover. Didn't look like there was a hangover from the video that everybody pretended to get mad about and took a step toward the NCAA tournament. Maybe you learned a little bit about Louisville last night. Not really sure I needed to know about Chris Mack because I think he's a really good coach, but still, I'm interested in the bounce back. This is the thing that I admired most about Andy Dalton, who had his limitations. And I'm glad Joe Burrow's here and not Andy. But the thing that always kind of told me a lot about Andy Dalton's mental makeup, he would have some terrible games. And maybe outside of his first year, when he would have a terrible game, there would be this huge referendum on Andy Dalton. See, he's not the guy. That's not a guy you pay. They shouldn't have paid him. Andy's not the guy. But you noticed how it never turned into back-to-back terrible games? Usually, right when we would spend like all week just, you know, hammering Andy, crushing Andy, wondering if whoever the backup quarterback was at the moment should be getting more. This would happen almost every single year. And then he would typically bounce back and play at times pretty well and sometimes really well. I'll never forget 2014. The Bengals play on Thursday Night Football against the Browns, and Andy is unspeakably bad. 10 of 33, 86 yards, 3 picks, passer rating of a 2. I didn't know it was mathematically possible at the time to have a passer rating of 2. They lose to a pretty mediocre Cleveland team in prime time at home. And because it was a Thursday, we had even more time to debate, pick apart, wonder about Andy, argue about Andy. Is this the beginning of the end? See, that was right after they gave him the contract. See, they shouldn't have given him the contract. The game after that, he played what might have gone down as his best game as a pro. beat the Saints on the road, 3 touchdowns, buck 43 passer rating, came back, led his team to the playoffs. I'm not telling you Andy was great. I'm not telling you this Bearcat team's great. Far from it. But I always appreciated that about Andy Dalton. That always told me something about him. College basketball season, you're going to suffer awful losses, heartbreaking losses, unless you're an absolute upper crust team, which Cincinnati is not. I'm interested in how they bounce back tonight. Tonight could be, I think, is more revealing. Sunday, they're not as good as Houston. Tonight, they're playing an equal, a legitimate talent equal. To me, it's less about how they match up against Tulsa and more, is there a hangover from Sunday? Are there things that can be learned from Sunday? The reality is John Brannon's going to be the coach next year. I think most of us understand that. If you don't, you're going to have to reconcile yourself with that. They're not going to go hire Rick Pitino. They're not going to go hire John Beilein. They're not going to go hire Greg Marshall. It's going to be John Brannon. And that's the case regardless of what happens tonight. But I think you'll feel at least a little bit better if you see his team respond this evening than if you don't. They had no chance of winning that game on Sunday. Dude, they hung with them for 10 minutes. You could just look at those two teams. You knew they weren't going to win that game. Does that game affect tonight's game? Does that game linger over the rest of the season? Do the improvements get made? Did they do what John Brannon said after Sunday and arrive at practice and show some form of determination to get better? We'll find out tonight at 9 o'clock, 17 away from 4. 513-749-1530, 866-702-3776. We're going to play a game of Would You Rather coming up at 4:05. It's Bengals related. Plus, the Reds have a guy on their roster who has sufficient experience at shortstop, and yet he's probably not going to play shortstop. We'll spend some time on that. You're also going to hear from a surgeon who did the exact same procedure that was done on Tiger Woods. Because I want to know if Tiger's going to play golf again. And that's not the most important thing, but let's be honest, it is a big, big reason why folks are interested in Tiger Woods. You'll hear from Travis Steele, and in about 1 hour, we've got a Skyline Chili gift card to give away. We're going to play Whose Bad Is That? That's coming up in 1 hour. I know you're excited, but first, Rick Boring, his weekly spot on XU Hoops and NKU Hoops. I like saying hoops. We'll talk about hoops with Rick next on ESPN 1530 Cincinnati Sports Station. 12 away from 4 o'clock, this is ESPN 1530. My name's Mo Egger. Rick Broering, whose website is musketeerreport.com, joins us every Wednesday to talk Xavier and NKU hoops. Rick, also the color man for NKU broadcast. Norris will open up Horizon League tournament play next week. They await their opponent, which will be determined tomorrow night. He's also one part of the Skinny podcast. And I ask you this every week, because new stuff comes up. Did I forget anything? Is there anything you need me to promote that I haven't? Let me know.
No, you're very generous each week with that overwhelming intro that you give me. It's much more than necessary.
Overwhelming is not the word that I would use, but nonetheless. Hey, I've got a new favorite Xavier Musketeer. Are you ready? Danny Ramsey's my guy.
I mean, it's tough not to love that story, right?
Yes.
That's a great one.
Yeah, so like the game on Sunday night, it's ugly, it's gnarly, they can't make a shot. I never felt like they were going to lose the game. Butler kept getting offensive rebounds and missing shots, and yet there was not, and look, there's hardly anybody in the Cintas Center, I get it, but there's not a lot of punch, not a lot of energy. He comes in the game, he makes a shot, he's running the floor, they give it to him on the break, he dunks, then he never sees the court again. That's my guy.
Well, and here's the thing. They actually needed those minutes out of him. Deontay Miles wasn't available. Obviously, Brian Griffin hasn't been playing the last few games because of COVID protocol, so he wasn't available. And then Zach Fremantle got two early fouls. They needed to buy some early minutes with somebody because, like you said, they weren't rebounding, so they couldn't go to a small lineup at that moment. And he gave them some energy. A kid that, honestly, I didn't know if he would ever be back on the floor for Xavier and playing in a game. And to be quite honest, in a year where it's COVID protocols and we're not allowed to be at practice every day, I didn't know he was
but like available off the bench like that. I mean, I didn't know he had been practicing regularly. So just a great story for Daniel Ramsey.
Yeah, it is. And if you didn't know the story and if you hadn't paid attention and saw him on the floor, look, you might not think that's a guy who should get starters minutes, but you would think that's a guy who can fit into what is already a large rotation.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he came in with the reputation of being a rebounder, an energy guy, someone who can provide some toughness and brawn around the rim, and maybe a little bit of touch, too. And obviously he came right in the game, hit a little mid-range jumper off of an underneath out-of-bounds play. He had that dunk that he finished through contact in transition. He had a rebound or two. I mean, he showed some promise. At the same time, his road has been so bumpy because of the health problems he's dealt with. He's had big-time knee issues that date back to his childhood that he's had to overcome. And it really just to even see him out on the court was pretty inspiring and pretty cool.
And watching, and you know, everybody's socially distanced, watching on TV the guys on the bench, you could tell they were thrilled for him. That was cool. That's my guy. Now, I watch these games, and I look at real time on Twitter. I can't recall, and maybe it was this way last year, I can't recall where in real time folks have expressed more frustration with Travis Steele's rotations. Of all the gripes that people have, you and I talked last week a little bit about the usage of Kiki Tandy. Of all the gripes that people have about the way Travis is deploying minutes, acknowledging that you know you're going to be without some guys because of COVID some games, what is the most legitimate gripe?
Well, I don't think it's about Kiki Tandy personally. I think Kiki Tandy has kind of been given what he asked for in terms of how he approached this season and the way he played early on. Like the coaching staff not trusting him in the second half of a must-win game because he hasn't cared about defense since he stepped on campus isn't on the coaches, in my opinion. Like they won the game by 12. If we're complaining because they didn't play a guy off the bench enough minutes in the second half, what are we really talking about? This isn't grade school basketball. So I'm not buying that at all. The gripe I would have about Travis Steele's rotations is that a few games this year, and even back to the St. John's and Connecticut games that they just lost prior to this Butler game, there's been times where he's gotten a lineup out on the court, particularly like after the first or second media timeout in the first half, where you can tell right away this lineup isn't going to score. They don't look comfortable out there together. You suffer through 7 or 8 bad possessions on offense. The other team goes on an 8-12-0 run or something like of that nature. And then all of a sudden, you had a great start, and now you're in a bad spot by midway through the first half. That would be my biggest gripe with Travis Steele's rotations to this point. But I also understand why he's still trying to feel out rotations because he hasn't been able to play a stretch of games since the beginning of the season, and he's had different players available to him throughout the year at every different turning point. So, I mean, it's been a really weird year, and I think it's one where it's tough to criticize playing time, lineups, rotations, and things of that nature.
Yeah, you're having to make so many day-to-day adjustments that I find a lot of that stuff to be more unfair than usual. Go back to the last Providence game. David Duke scores 30. They still don't win. They're up 7, a minute 15 to go. Musketeers come back. Colby Jones hits the shot at the end. So on one hand, I can look at that and say, man, Providence played really well. They got a great individual performance, and they still couldn't beat Xavier. On the other hand, I could say, look, this was a team that in the Cintas Center, granted home court not being what it usually is, should have won the game. You're up 7, a little bit more than a minute to go. You should win that game. How do you take what happened the first go-around back on January the 10th and apply it to what we see at the Dunkin' Donuts Center tonight?
Well, I think both arguments are legitimate, and I think what that equates to is we're going to see a close basketball game tonight. I don't think either team is going to blow the other out. But what I tend to lean back on if I'm trying to make a prediction on this game is the fact that you brought the main points up, that David Duke played really well, scored 30 points, was 7 of 9 from beyond the arc. But you didn't bring up the fact that their entire team shot 59% from three-point range, which is totally uncharacteristic for them. Nate Watson, their big man, had a really efficient double-double. And by the way, for Xavier, Paul Scruggs and Zach Fremantle both kind of stunk in that game. And yet Xavier found a way to win. I tend to think Providence's offense comes back down to earth. They don't get insanely hot from three, and this ends up being a pretty good matchup for Xavier. I'll take Xavier by a couple of baskets.
All right, here's what I'm doing with NKU, right? I want you to be ready for this. Maybe you're not even allowed to comment on this. The Norse are plus 550 to win the Horizon League tournament. Your assessment of that, I'm taking it, all right? Plus 550. I like my chances. There's value there with the Norse. Go ahead and comment on that.
It's very clear right now that Wright State is the most talented team in the Horizon League. But after what we just saw this past weekend, I'm not so sure that NKU isn't the second best team. They're the only team that proved a win over Wright State wasn't a complete fluke. The other three losses that Wright State had within the Horizon League, they beat their opponent by 35 in the other game of the back-to-back series, 35 or more, I should say. For NKU, you know, they turn around and they beat NKU by 7, I believe, in that second game. So I think NKU might just be the second best team in the conference right now. And with what's happened in this conference's recent history, with the number one seed failing to get to the finals pretty much every single year, I like your chances, Mo. I think there's a legitimate possibility that NKU could make a run at this.
Cleveland State recently lost to Purdue Fort Wayne, who's seeded 10th in this tournament. They're in NKU's side of the bracket. You told me at the beginning of the year when they got off to a great start, they're not that good. And so they're opposite Wright State. Wright State's had a hard time getting to the final. The Norse won't see the Raiders until the championship game. I like my chances. My question for you is, who do we want to play in round one? Or I guess, who do we want to play in the quarterfinals?
Well, it's almost a given that it's going to be Detroit. They're lined up against Robert Morris, and Robert Morris's best player left for the transfer portal with 2 weeks to go in the season. They've been a bit of a mess since then, as you would expect. They weren't too good to begin with. I think and the Horizon League reseeds after each round, meaning NKU is the 4 seed, so they will get the highest seed that wins in the first round. Detroit's the 5 seed. It's almost a given it's going to be Detroit, barring a major upset. So that's going to be tough. Antoine Davis can really score. There's a lot of other newcomers on this Detroit team that NKU fans haven't seen in the past. So they're a more talented team than what you saw from them last year, and they beat NKU once last year. So it's not going to be easy, an easy trip to the semifinals to face Cleveland State, and then that's not going to be easy either, as Cleveland State is a very experienced team that plays really hard, and they're physical and tough. So it won't be easy, but I think NKU has a very legitimate chance of making it to the finals again.
Plus 550. By the way, does Detroit still have my guy that looks like a beer keg from Kentucky?
No. Justin Miller graduated.
Yeah, no. Okay.
But he was a force last year, that's for sure.
No, you're right about that. He looked like – I think he's actually now playing at the Sharonville Rec on Tuesday nights. So you can go and see him. All right, plus 550. We'll talk about it next week. Thank you as always.
All right. I'll expect the call from NKU's compliance office after this. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. No problem. That's you're allowed to talk about it. You're not allowed to do it.
I'm just kidding with you. Thank you, Mel.
All right, Rick Broering is on Twitter at Rick Broering, MusketeerReport.com. Couple minutes away from 4 o'clock. My name's Mo Egger. You'll hear from Travis Steele. Do we have anybody talking to us today from Goodyear? We're going to play some David Bell for you from yesterday. You'll hear D. Strange Gordon, who wants to be the team starting shortstop, which is cool, except he hasn't played much shortstop recently. And we'll do all that. But first, also I have to remind you, Whose Bad Is That is coming up at 4:40. The Bad is up on the blog if you want to check it out at ESPN1530.com/Mo. Let's play a game of Would You Rather. It's Bengals related. Next.
The Cincinnati Bengals play here. ESPN 1530.
There you go. 4:05. My name's Mo Egger. You're listening to ESPN 1530. Thanks so much. We have a game of Whose Bad Is That coming up in about 35 minutes. You could feel the anticipation. Today's Whose Bad Is That is a little bit of a deep cut. Yeah? Deep cut? Yeah. So you have a chance to win a Skyline Chili gift card. coming up at 4:40. Looking forward to that. And we'll get to baseball's unfixable problem. A little bit on the Reds and the shortstop situation coming up in 1 hour. In 15 minutes, we have a surgeon. We don't often talk to surgeons. We have a surgeon who actually today, in fact, I'm guessing he like just got done. Today, he did the exact same surgery that was done on Tiger Woods. So I'm looking forward to having that conversation as somebody who I find Tiger Woods interesting for a lot of different reasons. And look, let's face it, he's the golfer that to this day still the most people care about. He's one of those athletes that now the majority of at least sports fans care about. Some don't like. I think most do. But nonetheless, we'll chat with our guy, the surgeon, here coming up in 15 minutes. And he does have a name. And I'll share it with you when we talk with him. Yesterday I had Paul Daner Jr. from The Athletic here, and we were talking about this little exercise that he made us go through on The Athletic, and you could still do it. It's a spreadsheet that it looks like a budgetary spreadsheet. Maybe you do it at work, maybe you have one with your family, but it's a budgetary spreadsheet, and it's interactive with a bunch of drop-down menus, and it requires you to essentially build a roster within the salary cap, which is about $180 to $181 million for this season, and, you know, do it within the confines of who's already on the team, who's going to be on the team no matter what, free agency, the draft, replacing guys with quote-unquote bargain replacements, and you can cut guys, you can create some cap space. It's an interesting exercise that I think reveals that it's not quite as easy as reciting a list of guys you want the Bengals to sign or that you want your favorite team to sign and bring them in, right? You got to do it within the restraints, within the parameters of the salary cap. I did this exercise, and then I gave up because, well, I had other stuff to do, but also I wanted the best possible offensive line, but I wanted to keep Carl Lawson, but I see value in William Jackson and some receivers I'd like for them to get. And after a while, enough. But the entire time that I did it, I'm looking at players. Like in my little exercise, I cut Giovanni Bernard and I cut Bobby Hart and I cut Geno Atkins, and I think most of us believe at least two of those three things are going to happen. And I toyed with cutting CJ Uzama, and ultimately I kept him. And that's not the point of what I'm getting to here. But I kept looking at the name Joe Mixon, thinking about how $12 million could be spent if Joe Mixon's name was not on that spreadsheet. Now, full disclosure, when we were having conversations last offseason, and they really kind of intensified after the draft, but when we were talking about what the Bengals are going to do with Joe Mixon, what they're going to do with A.J. Green, I was a proponent, and not like an emphatic bang my fist on the table, they're going to screw this up if they don't do it. But if asked to choose in the debate between sign Joe Mixon or let him go away because he's a running back and running back shouldn't be paid, I sided with paying him. For really three main reasons, but one of which was more important to me, at least, than the other two. The first one is he at the time was one of the few players on the roster that you could say is good at his position. Now, he's not a top five back. I'm not sure right now he's a top 10 back, but if you look at that roster coming into this past season, there weren't that many guys that you said had the potential to play into a top five guy at their position. So there's that. Number two, wants to be here. As the guy or one of the people who was opposed to the idea of drafting him, he's been a good teammate. By all accounts, he's been a good guy. He has shown a desire to want to stay here for this franchise right now. There is some value to that, but more than anything, as much as I tire of hearing coaches talk about culture, it is important to Zach Taylor. He's looking to establish a culture, and I think a coach deserves a chance to coach players who kind of fit what they're looking for when it comes to building a culture. And so I defaulted to, if Zach Taylor wants Joe Mixon here long-term, Zach Taylor should get Joe Mixon here long-term. If Joe Mixon's the kind of guy that Zach Taylor wants to coach, if Joe Mixon fits what Zach Taylor's looking for, then go ahead and get it done. That's the side that I took then. At the same time, here we are, and I think to a degree we knew this was going to happen. And I don't want to say I've completely gone back on that, but again, we want the Bengals to do a lot of different things this offseason, right? Carl Lawson, kind of like it if he stuck around, and William Jackson, and go get the best available offensive lineman, and is there any money for a wide receiver? And not to say that Joe Mixon's contract, if you got rid of it today and didn't have any of that money geared towards him, not to say you'd be able to do all these things, but it's $12 million on an annual basis. What would you rather do with that money? Pay a really good right tackle or a running back? This is nothing that's not that much against Joe. It is worth mentioning. This is a easier conversation, I guess, to have when he's coming off the season that he did, and he was hurt for most of it. And when he played, you watched him last year, just kind of underwhelming. Wasn't running behind a very good offensive line, frankly, at times. I didn't know if he was running for a team that really knew how to use him, but Joe Mixon's productivity last year left a lot to be desired. Then, of course, he was injured. And maybe this conversation's different. I'm not, maybe not even bringing it up if he's coming off a 1,400-yard year. But he's not. And he does play running back. And I don't think you need me to tell you what has happened to so many of these long-term running back contracts. I don't think you need me to tell you how that position has aged so poorly. It's well established. So, yeah, I'm not going to pretend that I was anti-sign Joe Mixon, but I got to be honest with you. I look at this team right now. If you told me you could have a really good right tackle and a top-notch edge rusher, or you could have one of those two things and Joe Mixon, I'd rather have the edge rusher and the right tackle. Or, hey, they could spend this amount of money on an offensive lineman who's better than the cheaper alternative. Maybe it's a guard. They can't get Joe Tooney. Or you could have Joe Mixon. I'd rather have the better guard. This is not a statement about Joe Mixon as a player, although last year he clearly wasn't great. It's not about unhappiness with him on the team at the position that he plays. It's understanding the value of the position. It's also understanding the value of the positions the Bengals have to find players for. And it's reflective of the fact that the salary cap is lower than it has been. Joe Mixon for $12 million or a quality corner? $12 million for Joe Mixon or $12 million that you could put towards William Jackson? $12 million that you could put towards Carl Lawson? And obviously, I'm just using Joe Mixon's annual salary. It's 48 over 4 years. It's not that I'm unhappy with him on the team. It's not that the Bengals should be unhappy with him on the team. It's not that he can't be a useful piece, because clearly he can still be, I think, a useful piece. Or I wouldn't have talked about signing him to begin with. But if you want the Bengals to do all the things we want the Bengals to do, and that list is long, from finding multiple offensive linemen, maybe adding a receiver. There's 1,000 wide receivers out there available, which should drive down the price, but still it's something I think a lot of us want to see the team spend some money on. If Carl Lawson goes away, they're going to have to find somebody to rush off the edge. And I'm guessing if William Jackson goes away, they'll try to find somebody to fill, if not his role, to fill his roster spot and be better than whatever internal options there are. It's a lot we want this team to do, including with its own guys. And by the way, Jesse Bates' contract extension looms on the horizon. Nothing against Joe, but there's valuing stuff. Anybody who's ever done a budget, anybody who's ever gone shopping and can only spend a certain amount of money, there's a lot of stuff you want. You want it all, right? You want it all. Let's say, I don't know, you got a gift card. It's $300. You're going to go to the mall. You're going to buy a bunch of stuff, as much as you possibly can. And then the totals, actually, it's, man, I got like $410 worth of stuff. Guess what, man? You're going to have to get rid of $110 worth of stuff. You want the stuff that you can't fit in under budget, but some of the other stuff is more important. Maybe this is a shaky analogy, but I can't help but look at the Bengals roster from the perspective of seeing that $12 million, seeing that contract, understanding the value of the position, understanding how it ages, understanding everything else they need to do, and preferring to spend that money elsewhere. The question for you is, what would you rather have? The amount of money that's gone towards a running back, or that money being able to be applied to anywhere else on the team? 513-749-1530 and 866-702-3776. Are we ever going to see Tiger Woods play golf again? Is he going to walk okay? What's his quality of life going to be? Could he even be competitive if he played golf again? Are there more surgeries in store? We'll talk with the surgeon next. 20 minutes after 4, this is ESPN 1530. I'm Mo Eggers. So I wanted to chat with somebody with a medical background about Tiger Woods. So we reached out to the orthopedic surgeon team at Tri-Health Orthopedic and Sports Institute, and they helped us out. But not only did they give us a surgeon to talk to, they actually gave us a surgeon who performed like the exact same procedure that was done on Tiger Woods. He did it like 3 hours ago. So let's chat about Tiger. I have a lot of questions. I know you do, too. Dr. Jason Welter is an orthopedic trauma surgeon, TriHealth Orthopedic and Sports Institute. I appreciate the time. Was the surgery a success?
Yeah, thank you very much for having me on. Yes, it was. Thank you for asking.
All right, very good, very good. So I've seen people with broken legs. I've never heard anybody refer to their broken leg as an open fracture. First of all, the extent of Tiger's injuries, and I know you're watching it from afar like all of us. Can you explain in terms that most of us will understand what exactly happened to his lower body?
Yeah, sure. So from my understanding, of course, not having seen his medical records or actual details of his injury, my understanding is that he had, on one of his legs, he had what we call an open tibia fracture, which means that the bone actually poked through the skin as a part of the injury. And then on his other leg, he had a ankle fracture as well as possibly some fracture.
I lost you for a second. Are you with me?
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm sorry.
All right. That's all right. That's fine. So the procedure itself, now it seemed like, paying attention yesterday, it was long, it was laborious, it was intensive. Give us the best idea you can specifically what was done yesterday, and are any further procedures needed?
Yeah, so basically there's multiple levels of his injuries. Number one, there's the fracture on the one leg. There's the fracture of the tibia bone, which has to be addressed. And then that's complicated a little bit by the fact that the bone poked through the skin, which creates a little bit more of an urgent scenario. That increases the risk of a possible infection when the bone pokes through the skin. So typically we like to get antibiotics on board right away, and then urgently get the patient to the operating room. And really the goals in the operating room are, number one, to wash out that open wound really good to try to minimize the risk of infection. And then if possible, get the wound closed. The sooner the wound is closed, it mitigates the risk of infection, as long as there wasn't any gross contamination or anything like that in the wound. And then secondarily, if injury allows for, we'd like to get it fixed definitively right away, which in his case sounded like he had a intramedullary nail or a rod inserted in his tibia bone to stabilize that tibia fracture.
So let's forget Tiger Woods the golfer for a second. He's a normal guy in his mid-40s who suffers this type of injury. What are the long-term effects? What does the rehab and recovery look like? And is this the kind of thing that could compromise his quality of life moving forward?
Yeah, so his rehab will be complicated a little bit by the fact that he had the injury to the opposite leg, from which my understanding was an ankle fracture as well as multiple foot fractures that also required some surgical stabilization. I believe, from my understanding, he had a plate and screws inserted on the bones around the ankle to take care of that break, and then possibly some pins placed in his foot fractures. That's going to complicate his rehab simply because now, he's dealing with two broken extremities rather than one. So whereas if he just had an isolated tibia fracture, he would have one good leg to kind of get around on. The fractures to both legs are going to probably, slow down his mobility a little bit. It's going to make him a little bit slower to return to walking and get his rehab going that way. But, in a relatively, especially in his case, in a young, healthy 45-year-old guy, assuming, the surgery was very successful, there were no complicating factors or issues, in my patient population, I usually see that ankle fractures tend to heal uneventfully by about 8 to 10 weeks. Tibia bones can be a little bit more complicated. The blood supply to the bone is not quite as robust. So there is a chance for some prolonged healing with the tibia. It can take sometimes up to 4 to 6 months for the bone to heal. And the fact that the fracture was open also creates an issue that could possibly delay the healing, especially if an infection were to develop. I don't know the extent of the open fracture. Sometimes an open fracture can be simply the bone poking through a little bit of the skin. Sometimes it can be a big open laceration, and the bigger the open wound, the bigger the chance of infection. So I do think that he has a good chance for a full recovery. I would expect, especially in a healthy 45-year-old, that they will fully recover. But it's just going to be a little bit of a road ahead of him.
All right, that's a normal, healthy 45-year-old. Now, we're talking about a 45-year-old who's played his sport at the absolute highest level, who's also undergone 5 back surgeries. He's had leg problems before. I don't want you to, you know, specifically calculate the odds of him playing competitively or even somehow returning to the form that we're all used to seeing. But can you describe from that standpoint the road in front of him and what it must be like for him when he even starts to plot out a possible comeback?
Sure. Well, you know, I'm never one to say always or never, and somebody who's played sports at the highest level, obviously their motivation level is ridiculously high. So I would not put anything past him that he absolutely could not get back to playing his sport at the highest level. But I certainly think that there will be a significant road ahead of him, especially considering his multiple back surgeries, including one of which I believe was fairly recent. So, you know, assuming that his ankle, foot, and tibia fractures heal uneventfully in a, you know, 2 to 4 month period, and then, you know, expecting that there's probably going to be another several months after that, getting his muscles stronger, getting all the range of motion back in his joints back to normal, you know, somewhere between that 6 month to a year time period down the road, you know, I think you could see him getting back into more sports-specific activities.
Awesome insight. I appreciate the time, Doc. Thanks so much.
Yeah, very, very good. Thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate it.
You're very welcome. That's Dr. Jason Welter. He is an orthopedic trauma surgeon, TriHealth Orthopedic and Sports Institute. He performed. Taryn, what did you do today? I came to work and read a bunch of sports blogs and mapped out a radio show, and now I'm sitting here talking about sports. That guy was in surgery 2 hours ago, saving someone's leg. That's what that guy did today. And then he went on the radio. We thank him. We thank TriHealth Orthopedic and Sports Institute. Hopefully Tiger's okay. 28 minutes after 4 o'clock. We're going to leave some time here because it may be a lengthy game of Who's Bad Is That? Who's Bad Is That is coming up in 12 minutes on ESPN 1530 Cincinnati Sports Station. We're guest-free the rest of the way. Sports updates, a service of Kelsey Chevrolet, home of lifetime powertrain protection and guaranteed credit approval from their family to yours for life. Go to kelseychev.com. Busy college basketball tonight. UC's at Tulsa. Cincinnati trying to bounce back after getting crushed by 38 points against Houston on Sunday. Tip-off at 9 tonight on 700 WLW. The Golden Hurricane are 10-9 this season. They do have a win over Houston. Meanwhile, the Xavier Musketeers look to make it 2 straight wins and 2 wins this season over Providence. Road game for the Muskies. XU beat Providence back on January the 10th, the game in which Colby Jones made a 3 at the horn. Friars are 11-11, coached by the only college sports figure I've never seen criticized on Twitter. Providence head coach Ed Cooley. Tip off at 9, pregame at 8:30 on 55 KRC. Also tonight, Dayton's at St. Joe's, and Indiana is at Rutgers. The L.A. County Sheriff says Tiger Woods was, quote, not drunk and will not face any charges in connection to the car crash, which severely injured his lower body. Who's Bad Is That coming up here in just a bit? Plus, we'll get to the red shortstop situation at 5:05. You'll hear Travis Steele at 5:35 as well. One of the big, I want to say controversies, but one of the more frequently discussed topics in baseball over the last couple of years has been service time manipulation, which I think the last time this came up here was prior to 2 seasons ago when the Reds started the season without Nick Senzel on the opening day roster because they wanted to protect that extra year of team control, the service time manipulation. The longer he stays in the minor leagues, the later it starts his service time clock. He doesn't accumulate the 6 full years needed for free agency, and we basically eke one more year out of him. And I think for, like, top-end prospects, and we could debate whether or not Nick Senzel ever should have been considered a top-end prospect because, well, he's gone through his own struggles. But still, he was, at the time, considered a big part of this team's future. And I think the whole thing is usually overblown. Not because I'm opposed to service time manipulation, which I am, but because, like I said this a couple of years ago when we were going through this, if Nick Senzel is any good, he's not going to get to that free agency year. Like, they're going to buy out his arbitration years, and they're going to sign him through his prime. If he's that good, they're not going to let him get to 6 years and then go. And they'll be willing to, you know, get to arbitration early. It's not going to be that big of a deal. And if he's not any good, then he's going to be long gone before he ever hits free agency. The now former president of the Seattle Mariners was let go or stepped down for a lot of different reasons. He said some incredibly ignorant and culturally insensitive things, but he also basically admitted to manipulating player service time. And this is something that has stuck in the craw of a lot of big league players before. I don't really know. I was talking about this with Tony Pike on Cincy 360, if you heard it. I don't really know what the solution to this is. I would like to see earlier free agency in baseball because I think, you know, the more players you have in their prime hitting free agency, the better it is for the sport. Now, there's all sorts of complications with that, obviously not the least of which is the fact that owners would have to okay it. I wonder if there is something to the idea, and I'm just kind of spitballing here. I wonder if there's something to the idea of instead of a player hitting free agency after a certain amount of years playing, that instead free agency is tied to an age. Like, you will hit free agency at the age of 27, or you will hit free agency at the age of 28, whether you come up as a 21-year-old or a 24-year-old. But of all the different things that are sort of facing this sport right now, and there's obviously a number of challenges, and we've talked about them, and some of which I think really don't resonate with most fans. Kind of boring, to be honest with you. But I think this is one of the most interesting because it does directly impact roster construction. And this really is the only sport where teams will willingly put forth, not in an effort to tank, but put forth a roster that's not its best, that's not its team's most ideal roster, in an effort to hang on to a player for another year. You could argue that Nick Senzel wasn't good enough to make the Reds better here in 2019 than whoever they chose instead of him. But this, to me at least, and I'm admittedly a bit of a nerd, is I think it's going to be really fascinating to see if they can come up with institutionally any fixes to something that really bothers a lot of players and rightly so bothers a lot of fans. 22 minutes away from 5 o'clock. Taryn, it's time. Today is day number 3. Tomorrow is National Chili Day. And our friends at Skyline Chili, in an effort to celebrate, have given us some Skyline Chili gift cards to give away. Every single, not Friday because I'm not here. Monday we played Whose Bad Is That. Now you might go, well, okay, I wasn't here Monday. I wasn't listening on Tuesday. Well, whose bad is that? Well, in the past we've played a game called Guess the Foot, right? And Guess the Foot was a very, very simple game. On my blog, we'd put up someone's foot. You had to call in and guess whose foot it was. And sometimes they were sports figures. Sometimes they were local sports figures. Sometimes they were national sports figures. Sometimes they were just celebrities or well-known people. Guess the Foot, we will bring back. I think we've played it once per year since 2019. This is a similar type game. Instead, it's called Whose Bad Is That? It's very, very simple. If you go to my website, ESPN1530.com/Mo, I've also tweeted out a direct link, at MoEgger1530. If you go to my blog, click on the Whose Bad Is That link. It says, Let's Play Whose Bad Is That? Click on it. And look at the picture of the bat. Study it. Just really give it a deep, hard look. Look at that bat. And then all you have to do is tell us, whose bat is that? And if you're the first one, 5-1. We don't play this on Twitter. This is not an email game. We're not doing it. No, You got to call the show, 513-749-1530. Day one, the bat belonged to Ken Griffey Jr. And we got a winner maybe within seven or eight people. Yesterday, it didn't take quite as long. Yesterday's bat belonged to Paul O'Neill. Today's bat, you tell us who it belongs to. Check out the website at ESPN1530.com/Mo, or you can go right to my Twitter feed, and I've just tweeted out a link at Mo Egger 1530. 513-749-1530. If you want to play, I think a game that is really going to revolutionize this industry. Whose bat is that? Next on ESPN 1530, Cincinnati Sports Station. It's 16 minutes away from 5 o'clock. This is ESPN 1530. My name's Mo Egger. I neglected to mention something really quick as we get set to play. Whose bat is that? We also have a contest line, 513-749-4545. Whose bat is that? Do we want to play the intro? Do we want to go ahead? We can't play the game without the official introductional theme. Introductional, probably not a word. Without the official. By the way, we just had a surgeon on, and I'm using words like introductional. We can't play Whose Bat Is That until the official fanfare of Whose Bat Is That. So go ahead and let's officially kick things off.
From the fine folks that brought you Guess the Foot, yeah. It's time to play America's new favorite game. Whose Bat Is That? Where you, the listeners, yeah. Call in right. And try to guess Whose Bat Is That? And now for your host.
Back to Price is Right. Yesterday it was Family Feud. Hey, tomorrow can we get like a Jeopardy? Huh? By the way, I think it might be a stretch to suggest that it's America's new favorite game, but maybe by the end of the week. The other thing quickly that I liked about the intro is I do this long-winded spiel about what Whose Bat Is That is, how you play, what the point of the game is, what you can win, and it goes on and on and on. My guy, Taryn, basically explained the game in that intro, which took 8 seconds. It took 8 seconds to explain what it took me 3 minutes to explain before the break. And then after the break, I come back and I explain the game for anybody who's just joining us. It's very simple. We have up for grabs a Skyline Chili gift card. Tomorrow is National Chili Day, so celebrate at Skyline. And if I'm going to do this again. You go to the website, ESPN1530.com, my blog. I think it's still search word Mo or slash. Just go to my Twitter, find it. Go to my blog. There's a picture of a bat. Tell us whose bat it is and put an end to this so we can resume the sports talk part of the show. All right, Taryn, are we – and you have to call in 513-749-1530, toll free 866-702-3776. And I think we actually have one contest line open, 513-749-4545. Have we taken care of all the formalities? Are we allowed to go now? Are we allowed to do this? We can proceed? I forgot we have music. That's right. Got the Beastie Boys. All right, let's see here. Let's go with Andrew. Whose bat is that?
Philip Irvin.
Do we have a Philip? No, it is not Philip Irvin. Thank you so much for playing Whose Bat Is That on ESPN 1530. That's how easy it is. That is how easy it is. Except he didn't win, so it's not that easy. Jeff, whose bat is that?
Eugenio Suarez.
Can I get an Eugenio Suarez? No. Jeff, thank you so much for playing Whose Bat Is That on ESPN 1530. You know, it'd be great if, you know, what we ought to do is next time we play this, get it sponsored. Man, imagine the companies lining up to attach their brand to this. Paul, can you tell us whose bat is that?
Brandon Phillips.
Brandon Phillips, no. Thank you so much for playing. Whose bat is that? We are 0 for 3. What do we think? We were like 8 deep on Monday, and then yesterday like 5 deep. We'll see. We have open lines, 513-749-1530, 513-749-4545, and 866-702-3776. If you want to play, whose bat is that? Alex, whose bat is that? Alex.
Ryan Hannigan.
Is it Ryan Hannigan's bat? Thank you for playing. Kind of made the sound effect myself there. Let's see here. Nick. Nick, can you tell us whose bat is that?
Let's go with Willie Mopena.
Can I get a Willie Mopena? No. Thank you. so much for playing. Whose bat is that on ESPN 1530? The intrigue is starting to build. I can feel it. Brad, you're on ESPN 1530. Can you tell us whose bat is that?
Jay Bruce.
Jay Bruce? No, sorry, Brad. Brad sounded kind of dejected. Even before he spit out his answer. Taryn, I can answer these. You got your hands full in there. You want me to go ahead and do that? Let's see. Here, I'll do this. I'm helping Taryn screen phone calls as I host the game. Oh, I'm a hell of a multitasker, aren't I? Remember, we're playing for a twenty. It's a Skyline Chili gift card. You gonna bat your eye at the amount? It's free Coney's National Chili Day tomorrow. All right, Darren, can you tell us whose bat is that?
The Moose.
Is it the Moose? Mike Moustakas, no, thank you for playing. Whose bat is that on ESPN 1530? Pictures on the blog at ESPN1530.com. Matt, can you tell us whose bat is that?
Jose Peraza.
Is it Jose Peraza? Taryn, after how many of these do we give a hint? After how many of these whose bat is that? Because, you know, guess the foot, that we got to the point where eventually we would have to start giving hints, but I don't want to give it away. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see if maybe our next round of calls, if there's somebody in there who can successfully get whose bat is that. And if not, we'll see what we can do to make it maybe a little bit easier. But as of now, I don't think we need to do that. Let's see. Sean, can you tell us whose bat is that?
Yes, is it Eric Davis?
Is it Eric Davis? Do we have an Eric Davis? No, thank you. Thank you for playing. Whose bat is that? Thank you for playing. To be honest with you, nobody's really come close. This is a little bit of a deeper cut compared to the last 2 days. We had Ken Griffey Jr. We had Paul O'Neill. And today, it's up to you to tell us. Whose bat is that? By the way, is anybody tired of me saying whose bat is that? Probably. Brian, can you tell us whose bat is that?
Hey,
Brian, can you tell us whose bat is that?
You got it, brother. It's Nick Senzel.
Is it Nick Senzel? It is not Nick Senzel. Brian, thank you for playing Whose Bat Is That on ESPN 1530. Yesterday, I got a text from a buddy of mine during this game. Whose bat is that, huh? It's the kind of support that I get. Gary, can you tell us whose bat is that? Gary? Can you tell us whose bat is that? No? Apparently the answer would be no. Sorry. Thank you for playing, Garrett. Give him the buzzer. There you go. Let's see. Marlon, can you tell us whose bat is that?
Barry Larkin.
Is it Barry Larkin? Is it the Hall of Famer? Is it the new voice? No, it's not. Sorry. Thank you so much for playing. Whose bat is that? All right. We'll try to get to a few more here. We do have to get a break in. Let's see. Lee, can you tell us whose bat is that?
Well, after doing a lot of analytical studies on this, I'm going to guess that it's Michael Lorenzen.
Can I get a Michael Lorenzen here? No. All right, here's the deal. All right, I'll do a hint for the purposes of maybe helping those who are waiting on hold. The owner of this bat is not a current Red. How about that? Then maybe narrow it down a little bit. It's not a current Red. We have not done a current Red yet playing Whose Bat Is That? All right, let's see. let's go to Rick. Rick, can you tell us whose bat is that?
Pete Rose.
Is it Pete Rose's bat?
No,
it is not. No, it's not the Hit King's bat, but thank you so much for playing. All right, Paul, can you tell us whose bat is that?
Greg Vaughn.
Is it Greg Vaughn? Do we have a Greg Vaughn? 1999 Reds. Okay, very good. Marcus, can you tell us whose bat is that?
No, I was going to say Greg Vaughn.
Well, you didn't, so say somebody else. Literally any human being that's not Greg Vaughn, say their name.
Joey Votto.
Is it Joey Votto? Joey Votto's on the Red. He said it's not a current Red. That guy should send me a Skyline gift card for not even getting the hint. All right, a couple more here before the break. Gene, can you tell us whose bat is that?
Oh, hey. Boy, well, I was going to say Aquino, I'm just going to say Trevor Bauer because I know he's not a Red.
He's not a Red anymore. Let's know. Thank you so much, Gene, for playing. Remember, Trevor Bauer didn't hit last year, so the pool of at-bats would have been small because he was here 10 games. 2019. Nonetheless, thank you so much for playing. This is the most Beastie Boys instrumental I've ever heard in my life, by the way. Mike, can you tell us whose bat is that? Mike? Oh, we cut him off. He might have been the winner. Who knows? All right. How much time do we have here, Taryn, before we get a break? 1 minute? You're laughing. Are you laughing because this is good? Yeah. Adam, can you tell us whose bat is that?
Austin Kearns.
Is it Austin Kearns? No, it is not Austin Kearns. Thank you so much for... All right. Let's see here. Kenny, welcome to Whose Bat Is That? Can you tell us whose bat it is?
I doubt it, but I'm going to give it a hell of a try.
Give it a shot. Go ahead.
I mean, yes, Todd Frazier.
Is it Todd Frazier? No! Thank you for playing Whose Bat Is That? All right, Taryn, get a break in. Is that the deal here? Turn off the music? Okay. We will keep playing. We're gonna launch back into the part of the show where I give inane sports opinions. But we are not. In fact, I might go ahead and pull rank here. Not that I'm qualified or capable of doing this, and say if we don't get a winner, we just might go past 6 o'clock. 513-749-1530 and 866-702-3776. Speaking of bats, and I'll maybe come up with another hint as well. It's not a current red. We've established that, correct? Okay, very good. So we'll do more Whose Bat Is That, because we have to have a winner. You can't play a game without a winner. Okay, this isn't soccer. All right, no tie. Speaking of baseball, the Reds have a shortstop on their roster. So why is he not playing shortstop? We'll spend some time on that at 5:05 on ESPN 1530 Cincinnati Sports Station.
This is Dave Lapper, and you're listening to the home of the Bengals, ESPN 1530.
All right, here we go. How you doing? I'm Mo Egger. This is ESPN 1530. Thank you for listening. Hope you're having a very, 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 very good Wednesday. We have a lot to get to this hour. We're gonna pick a shortstop for the Reds. I'm going to give you a couple of different choices. I'm not even necessarily asking you to pick a specific shortstop. Well, I kind of am. I'll explain here in just a few minutes. Plus, what I hope you were doing in April of 2019, Bengals hindsight, you'll hear Travis Steele, and we'll get to whether or not the Bearcats can bounce back tonight against Tulsa after getting crushed on Sunday. Here's what we're going to do, okay? Here's what we're going to do. We're going to take the calls we have right now. If you're just joining us, boy, you've missed some fun. We're playing a game called Whose Bat Is That? The idea was not for this to bleed over into the last hour of the show, but now I feel almost a moral and professionally ethical responsibility to ensure that we have a winner today. We're giving away a Skyline Chili gift card if you can successfully identify the bat that's on my... Go to my blog, click on the link, look at the bat, call the show, tell us whose bat is that. So far, we've had, about 20 contestants? Nobody has gotten it. Now, we did, after a while, give a hint. I've also tweeted out a link to this as well. I gave a hint. This is not a current Cincinnati Red. I will tell you it is a former Cincinnati Red who was on the team prior to 2010. So think about the first... 140 years of the franchise. Pick anybody. This guy was actually pretty good with the bat, too. And he became, I don't want to say a fan favorite, but he had a skill set that certain fans really came to enjoy. How about that? Huh? Okay. We'll see if maybe that steers anybody in the right direction, and if the folks we have right now cannot successfully play Whose Bat Is That, we'll carry it over to the next segment, and we'll get to the red shortstop situation, which entire city waiting with bated breath to hear my thoughts on that. Let's see. Ryan, can you – oh, get the music. I forgot. Can you tell us Whose Bat Is That? Ryan?
Is that Brandon Phillips?
Is it Brandon Phillips? No. You okay in there? You fall asleep at the trigger? What else do you have going on? You got to get the audio ready to play, but the shortstop and David Bell and D-Gore. Yeah. All right. Because Taryn's actually trying to produce a talk show, and I want to play, you know, this. Tyler, can you tell us whose bat is that?
Is it Ryan Friel?
Is it Ryan Friel's bat? Ryan Friel. It was not Ryan Friel. Thank you so much for playing. Whose bat is that? I was going to give a hint based on that, but I think that would like blatantly give it away, so I'm not going to. Todd, can you tell us whose bat is that?
Adam Dunn?
No, thank you for playing Whose Bat Is That on ESPN 1530. Jeff, can you tell us whose bat is that?
Yes, it's Chris Stein.
Do we have Chris Stein's? Chris Stein. Chris Stein's, like in 97, 98-ish, came up and, like, you know, led the planet in hitting for, like, 3 weeks. Everybody loved him, had killer sideburns, and then forgot about him. let's see. Roy, can you tell us whose bat is that?
Reggie Sanders.
Is it Reggie Sanders? Reggie Sanders. Great career. Possibly could have been MVP in 1995, but no. He is not the subject of today's whose bat is that. By the way, I'm getting conflicting messages. I have folks who are telling me this is the worst thing they've ever heard, and I have people who are telling me they want us to do this every single day. And I'm, by the way, I'm not sure either of those things are necessarily good. Let's see. All right, a few more here. Dennis, can you tell us whose bat is that? No, he can't. Let's see. Brian, can you tell us whose bat is that?
Can you tell us what decade he played in?
See, you're asking for a hint. You're asking for a hint.
I mean, 2010.
I'm trying to make it difficult. Now, see, if you ask for a hint, then everybody's going to ask for a hint.
I would say Devin Mesoraco.
Is it Devin Mesoraco? No, it is not Devin Mesoraco. One more, and then we will actually do a sports talk show. Will, can you tell us whose bat is that?
Is it Johnny Gomes?
Is it Johnny Gomes? It's not Johnny Gomes. Thank you so much for playing. Whose bat is that? You can line up. We'll play here in just a bit. 513-749-1530 and 866-702-3776. And maybe we'll give another. You can't call and ask for a hint. That's like blatantly. I mean, we are giving hints after the game started, but that you can't. But thank you. Can't do that. All right. 10 after 5. Obviously the big, maybe the only like real significant question for the Reds as they, begin Cactus League play here on Sunday, as spring training, unfolds down there in Goodyear, is who is the starting shortstop going to be? This maybe kind of came to a head a little bit yesterday. David Bell talked about it. D. Strange Gordon talked about it. Eugenio Suarez has talked about it. Can you give me some D. Strange Gordon from yesterday, acquired by the Reds just a couple of weeks ago, a protege of Barry Larkin, and a guy who's had a good big league career. Here is D. Strange Gordon, who wants to be the team's starting shortstop, who thinks he can be the team's starting shortstop, talking about being possibly the Reds' starting shortstop.
How much are you getting up to speed on shortstop again? It's been a few years since you've played it regularly. I know you've played it here and there, but how much of that is on your mind to try to...
Shortstop in my position. I play second base because, you know, that was the only way I could get in the big leagues at the time with the Dodgers. That's the only way I could break in and, you know, solidify myself as a big leaguer. This has always naturally been my position, and I'm just happy to finally get to play it. Or get an opportunity to play it.
Is there anything about the makeup of this team that jumps out at you?
I'm going to be honest with you, sir. I was in Seattle, and I did not see the Cincinnati Reds play a lot of baseball. I'm just here to showcase my talents, and hopefully we can go from there.
All right, there's a D. Strange Gordon, and admittedly it's strange, no pun intended, talking about him by his new name, D. Strange Gordon, which, you know, whatever. That's his name, so that's what we're going to call him. But for years, he was D. Gordon, and now he's D. Strange Gordon. And that's strange. But anyway, so he wants to be the team's starting shortstop. which fine, it's the only spot available on the team. So, you know, he's played everywhere else. He's played second base. He's played some outfield. He hasn't played shortstop on a regular basis since 2013. He has logged last year 19 innings at shortstop. The year before that, 13 innings at shortstop. 2018, 65 innings at shortstop. 2017, 16 and a third innings at shortstop. 2015, zero innings at shortstop. 2015, zero innings at shortstop. 2014, zero innings at shortstop. Now, in 2013, he played over 206 innings at shortstop. In 2012, he played over 650 innings at shortstop. I'm guessing there are reasons, understanding the importance of shortstop, I'm guessing there are reasons why he played other positions instead of shortstop, like second base, almost exclusively in Miami. Occasionally the outfield, which he played 50 games in 2018. Like, that probably says something about his ability to play shortstop. The fact that he played it forever and then, well, anybody he played for wanted him to play somewhere else besides shortstop. So there's that with D. Gordon, who I'm not opposed to being on the team. Not even necessarily opposed to him being the shortstop, but he's not played it all that often. I'm also going to guess Kyle Farmer as a major leaguer has logged more innings behind the plate than at shortstop. I'm going to guess that at this stage in his career, there's a reason why Kyle Farmer has not settled in as a starting shortstop in the big leagues. Kyle Farmer has played 86 and two-thirds innings at shortstop. He has been behind the plate for 90 and two-thirds innings. He is a utility guy. Utility guys are utility guys for a reason. It might be that they're not that good with the bat. Kyle Farmer, statistically, is not that good with the bat. It also might be that defensively, they're not good enough to play one position. There's value in utility guys. I hope Kyle Farmer's on the team. He could do a little bit of everything. Hell, he's pitched before. But Kyle Farmer, at the age of 30, which is what he is, probably a utility guy. There are reasons why nobody to this stage in his career has asked Kyle Farmer to be an everyday shortstop. Those reasons probably lie both with his lack of offensive ability and also the fact that he's not great with the glove. At a position where, maybe not ideally, but at a position where you'll take a dude who can pick it and whatever he gives you offensively, okay. Kyle has not stuck as a big league starting shortstop. What's interesting to me, though, is the Reds have a Eugenio Suarez on the roster. Eugenio Suarez has played 183 big league games as a shortstop. Maybe not the most extensive experience ever. And again, there's reasons why they moved him, but he's got more experience playing shortstop than Kyle Farmer. He's got more recent experience playing shortstop at the major league level than D. Gordon. And Eugenio Suarez is the third baseman. Let me ask you a question. You pick here. This is we've talked about how to get Nick Senzel's bat in the starting lineup. If they value Nick Senzel, if they value Shogo Akiyama, and one of the things that's going to be interesting about the team this year is the usage of Shogo Akiyama. Because remember early in the season, you know, they spent all this money for him, and then it was like, man, they never play him against lefties. Like, they pay $21 million for a platoon guy. Well, remember, the dude who wanted to go get Shogo and got Shogo is no longer here. Like, that was Dick Williams' guy. So I wonder what that's going to mean for his playing time. It's also worth mentioning the final 3 weeks of the year last year, Shogo got on base 46% of the time. It's also worth mentioning this is a bad defensive team. Shogo's good with the glove. Small margin for error, might want that guy out there in the field. So you've got the former number two overall pick who's still kind of learning the position. We have no idea what he can do offensively, but I'm going to guess the Reds value Nick Senzel's bat more than they do D. Gordon's, more than they do Kyle Farmer's, and they should value his bat more than they do those guys. Why wouldn't you play Moustakas at third, Senzel at second, and just give a Eugenio Suarez a chance to play short. He talked today about dropping some weight, which you would need to play the position. He has played it before. Probably not going to play it at a high level. But to me, you've got to value one thing or the other. If you value more than anything else defensively, defense, put that wrong. But if you value defense more than you do the offensive production you're going to get from shortstop, play Jose Garcia. Legitimately, Jose Garcia is probably the best defensive shortstop right now of all the guys we're talking about maybe playing the position. And you go, you know what? It might hamper his development. We're going to have to work through that. He might not be able to hit a lick this year, which is likely. But if you hit it towards him, he's going to pick it. He could play the shift. He could play on the other side of second if you need him to. He's going to man the position. If you value defense, this is based on a small sample size of watching him last year. But if you value defense and the hell with everything else, play Jose Garcia. If you value offense and you're just going to outscore people and you're willing to put up with whatever defensive shortcomings you've got to live with, play a Eugenio Suarez at shortstop, which gives you a chance to squeeze Nick Senzel and Shogo in the lineup. I get Shogo every single day. He's good defensively. He got on base at a great clip last year. Senzel gets a shot to play almost every single day. You still value his bat. And he's probably still a better hitter than Kyle Farmer. He's probably still a better hitter than D. Gordon right now. If you don't really value either, play one of those other guys. I want to be good. I want to be good at one of those two things. I want to have a guy who could pick it at shortstop, which is a really important defensive position, or I want my best offensive lineup out there. Kyle Farmer, Kyle Holder, D. Gordon, any of these other dudes we've been talking about, give me neither. Kyle Farmer, nice guy, valuable piece off the bench. Great to have a dude that could play a lot of positions. Had a game-winning hit at a game that I was at a couple of years ago against the Astros, and that was a blast. Had him on our show from Skyline Chili. If that guy's your starting shortstop, you're probably not good at that position defensively, and that guy is giving you nothing of sustainable value at the plate. Nothing of sustainable value at the plate. Be good at one thing. D. Gordon has had a quality big league career. He's been in the big leagues for a decade. He's won a batting title. He's stolen a bunch of bases. He's also been caught stealing a bunch. He's gotten a lot of hits. He's also 32 years old, and maybe if the economy is different, somebody else wants him, but he signed a minor league contract. He hasn't played the position in forever. Last year, he hit 200. He doesn't get on base a lot. He hits for zero power. He's probably not helping you all that much defensively at that position. He's probably not giving you that much offensively. Garcia is giving you one thing. Suarez moving positions to get Senzel in the lineup is probably giving you your best chance to score runs. To me, it's do one or the other. Kyle Farmer playing every day at shortstop doesn't move the meter. I don't think D. Strange Gordon does either. I will be glad to admit if I'm wrong. But if you've got a guy, Eugenio Suarez has played more shortstop in recent seasons than any of these dudes. And he's going to play. The issue is not whether or not he plays. The issue is if he moves the short, how do the dominoes fall? Moustakas goes to third, then bam, Senzel can play second. If they're worried about Senzel playing short, which they are, you might argue they shouldn't be, but if they're worried about him making the throw from short, he's not going to make it from third base. So play him at second, play Moustakas at third. That is probably going to be a brutally bad defensive infield. But you're better positioned to outscore people. And Kyle Farmer, D. Gordon, probably also give you kind of a brutally bad defensive infield. Neither of those guys are helping you offensively. Or Jose Garcia picks it at short, makes every play, dazzles at times, which I think he can do. Evaluators seem to think he could do. Doesn't hit a lick, but at least you're a little bit better defensively. Go be better. Go in one direction or the other. Kyle Farmer, D. Gordon, the dude from the Phillies, all these guys sort of are a microcosm of what the Reds are right now, which is go in no definitive direction. How about go in a definitive direction? Be better offensively or be better defensively. The guys we're talking about playing the position minus Jose Garcia don't help you get better at either. The direction we're going to go in is to hopefully finish our game of whose bat is that? 22 after 5, 513-749-1530, 866-702-3776. You're playing for a Skyline Chili gift card. We've got Bengals hindsight to get to. We've got the college basketball from tonight, so much more between now and 6 on ESPN 1530 Cincinnati Sports Station. All right, there we go. 26 after 5 o'clock. This is ESPN 1530. My name's Mo Egger. All right, Taryn, do we have to play every time we launch into a new round? This is like round 3, right? We haven't found a winner. Are we obligated to play the open, the form? No, just go, right? Just get it over with. Is that what you want? You're tired of this? You're ready to move on? There's the support that I'm looking for from my right-hand man. All right, very good. All right, whose bat is that? Look at the damn blog. Find the picture. Look at it. Tell us whose bat it is. Okay, we want a hint now? Okay. This the person who owns, or I should say owned, maybe the bat broke, maybe they still have it. I don't know. So we told you that they are not a current Red. It told you they played prior to 2010 for the Reds. I will tell you this player played parts of 3 seasons with the Reds. I'm giving you, not the easiest hints ever, but this is not supposed to be an easy game, although my producer wishes it was. He wishes, like, you saw the guy's name on the back of his jersey as the bat hit it, but it's not that way. We have the contest lines are one of them is taken, but the rest of them are open at 513-749-4545. And a toll-free 866-702-3776. You might get lucky at 513-749-1530. Are we ready, Taryn? Has your enthusiasm for this waned as much as I detect? Yeah. All right. Jeff, can you tell us whose bat is that?
Deion Sanders.
Is it Deion Sanders? No, it's not Deion Sanders. Taryn looks dejected. Marcus, can you tell us whose bat is that? Marcus! We got a quick trigger, man. Like, you got to be ready. Call your name. Tell us who's bat. You've had, like, all afternoon to think about it. Huh? Chris, can you tell us whose bat is that?
Scott Rowland.
Is it Scott Rowland? It is not Scott Rowland. Scott played with the Reds from 09 through 2012. Remember, pre-2010. Let's see, Dave, can you tell us whose bat is that? Dave?
Yes,
can you tell us whose bat is that?
Jay Bruce.
Is it Jay Bruce? Yeah! Are folks listening to the hints that we're giving them? Are they? All right, go to the website, look at the photo. It's at ESPN1530.com. Tell us who owns the bat. Look at that bat. Study that bat. Share it with your friends. Tell us whose bat is that? 513-749-1530. Bill, can you tell us whose bat is that? Bill?
Hello.
Hello, Bill. Can you tell us whose bat is that?
Yeah, so you said he had a special gift or a special talent. How about Benito Santiago?
I know where you're going, but no, it is not Benito Santiago. No, he had a skill set that a lot of fans really seem to appreciate, but it was confined to his work on the baseball field. And it was a skill set, not a physical attribute, if you know what I mean. Jerry, can you tell us whose bat is that?
Kyle King.
Excuse me?
Kyle King.
Kyle King?
No, Hal King.
Oh, Hal King. No, it is. Wow, That's a throwback. No, not the catcher who hit the big home run against the Dodgers in 1973. Craig, can you tell us whose bat is that?
Is it Nick
Asaski? Is it Nick Asaski? All right, here we go. All right, so we're struggling here. We're having a hard. We're almost 45 minutes into whose bat is that? Taryn, do you think we have to offer another hint? Do you think we have to offer?
Run out of show.
We are kind of running out of show here, aren't we? All right. This guy is one of the few players. Actually, I have to look this up really quickly before. Yes, this guy is one of the few players who was teammates with. I'm double checking this. Yes, this guy has appeared in the same baseball games as Ken Griffey Jr. and Joey Votto. 2 Reds Hall of Famers, 1 National Hall of Famer. Okay? All right? See, now we're kind of narrowing the time frame a little bit. We're doing what we can here. If we run out of show, do we do it? Do we just pick this up again tomorrow on top of the game that we're already obligated to play? By the way, thanks to our friends at Skyline Chili. All right, let's see what we can do here. Rob, can you tell us whose bat is that?
Is it Kevin Mitchell?
Kevin Mitchell played for the Reds in 1994. No. Are people having a hard time, like, hearing me? is the music drowning me? I don't know. Taryn, I don't. You're in charge. Ken, can you tell us whose bat is that?
This is Ken. I think Glenn Braggs.
Is it Glenn Braggs?
You're out!
No. Like, I am giving pretty obvious, I mean, not obvious answer. I'm giving hints that thought would eliminate Glenn Braggs from consideration, but you know, we'll see. Dennis, can you tell us whose bat is that? Dennis?
Yes, Chris Heisey.
Is it Chris Heisey?
No.
It is not Chris Heisey.
No.
Oh. Marcus, can you tell us whose bat is that?
Johnny Gomes.
Is it Johnny Gomes? We already had somebody that asked Johnny Gomes.
You're out!
One more before the break. Brett, can you tell us whose bat is that?
I'm going to go with Willie Mo Pena.
Willie Mo? No, I think second person today to guess Willie Mo. You know, we need like an intern to document all of the guests that have been registered that were wrong so that we don't have repeats. Taryn, you okay? Here, you know what? Is that Katie? All right, Katie, can you tell us whose bat is that?
Edwin Encarnacion.
Is it Edwin Encarnacion? It's not Edwin Encarnacion. That is a good guess. But no, sorry, not it. You just want me to answer these four phone calls here blind without screening them? You want me to? Taryn, take a load off, my man. All right. But no more music? All right. Hi, you're on ESPN 1530. Can you tell us whose bat is that?
How about Adam Dunn?
Adam Dunn? No, Adam Dunn did fit the criteria. But no, it's not Adam Dunn. Hi, could you tell us whose bat is that?
Dimitri Young.
Is it Dimitri Young? Dimitri Young too early for what we just talked about there. Hello, you're on ESPN 1530. Can you tell us whose bat is that?
Javi Valentin.
Is it Javi Valentin? No. Hello, you're on ESPN 1530. Can you tell us whose bat is that?
Ryan Friel.
Second time we've had him. Hello, you're on ESPN 1530. Can you tell us, please tell us whose bat is that?
Ryan
Friel. Excuse me?
Ryan Friel.
Ryan Friel, back-to-back Ryan Friels. No, but I mean, they're listening. He's listening to the radio. We're not, you know, it's not Ryan Friel. there's a part of me that loves the fact that this is hard. There's a part of me that hates the fact that this is hard. Get a break in? Okay. 26 from 6. It's not my fault we haven't been able to launch back into the sports opinion and commentary that normally fills the time when we're on the air. We just, you know, we're trying. We're trying to give away the damn gift card. I didn't want to take caller 7. This has worked all week, and now today we're stuck. It's 25 away from 6. You are welcome to play Whose Bat Is That? 513-749-1530 or 513-749-4545. This is ESPN 1530 Cincinnati Sports Station. Sports Update is a service of Kelsey Chevrolet, home of lifetime powertrain protection and guaranteed credit approval from their family to yours for life. Go to kelseychev.com. College Hoops tonight. Two games at 9 o'clock late night. College Hoops, UC and Tulsa. Bearcats obviously pounded against Houston on Sunday afternoon. They have won 4 out of 5. Tip-off tonight at 9 p.m. on 700 WLW. Meanwhile, the Xavier Musketeers looking for their second win this season over Providence. Second consecutive win after beating Butler on Sunday evening. Tip-off also at 9 on 55 KRC. Dayton and St. Joe's tip off in about 20 minutes. Indiana tonight is at Rutgers. L.A. Sheriff's Office says no charges filed against Tiger Woods. The spokesperson for the department saying, quote, he wasn't drunk, which is good to know. And hopefully Tiger recuperates. Let's see. This is the kind of thing we could have talked about during the break. What should we proceed with the sports talk programming, or should we put a See if somebody can put an end to this.
We have to put an end to this now.
See if somebody could put an end to this. I'm going to be blamed for the duration, for the length of whose bad is that. It's not my fault. All right. Do we have to give another hint?
Not yet.
Not yet? Okay. Let's see. We have, let's see. Joe? Joe, can you end this game? Can you tell us whose bad is that?
Brandon Phillips.
It's not Brandon Phillips. No. Another Joe. Joe, can you end this and tell us whose bad is that? Joe.
Well, I was going to go with Brandon Phillips myself, but I don't think that's going to be quite right. Wow. No, I don't got one for you now.
I mean, just mention a person's name. You might stumble into it, but all right, fine. All right, so remember, like the time frame here, right? They were teammates with both Joey Votto at one point and Ken Griffey Jr. at one point, and at one point, briefly, they were teammates with both at the exact same time. Right? That's the sort of the little mini window we're talking about here. Let's see. Richard, can you win the Skyline Chili gift card so we can move on?
Corky Miller.
Is it Corky Miller? No, but I will say this. This player and Corky Miller are, I believe, yes, this player and Corky Miller are linked. Okay? This player and Corky Miller are linked. Come on. I'm trying to give this away. Brian, can you tell us whose bad is that?
I'm going to try. I'm a little late to the game. I'm going to say the mayor, Sean Casey.
Sean Casey. Yeah. No. Not Sean Casey. Sean Casey was pre-Votto. Lyrics. Okay, very good. Steve, can you tell us whose bad is that? Steve?
I'm going to go with Austin Kearns.
It is not Austin Kearns. Thank you so much for playing. Austin Kearns was memorably traded to the Washington Nationals for Gary Majeski and Bill Bray and some other people pre-Votto. Brandon, can you tell us, please tell us whose bad is that?
Yeah, is it Scott Hatteberg?
Is it Scott Hatteberg? This is a good guess. No, it is not, Scott. I'm asking even though I know the answer. I like to keep the audience in suspense as we've tortured them for an hour. Eric, can you end this game? Tell us whose bad is that.
Okay, I think I'm going to put an end to it, guys.
Yes.
Norris Hopper.
I feel like at the end of all that, the little ding, the guy won thing, it's line 8, Taryn, Eric. The little ding, there should be more fanfare. Yes, Norris Hopper, who was actually traded for Corky Miller. If you remember, Norris was a part of three different Reds teams, 2006, 2007, 2008. He actually, in 2007, on a bad team, hit .329. If you remember, he was like the king of bunt base hits. And people loved him because he got a lot of bunt base hits, extra outfielder, and was pretty good at handling the bat. that year in 2007, he had .329 in a very small amount of plate appearances in 21 games in 2006, which that team kind of hung around the pennant race for a while. He had .359, and then 2008, he kind of turned into a pumpkin. Not literally, but his numbers fell. Maybe he got hurt. That I don't recall. But he got traded to the White Sox for Corky Miller, and then never appeared in a big league game. Again, Norris Hopper, master of the bunt hit, was a Red in 2006, was a Red in 2007. 2007 was Ken Griffey Jr.'s last full season in Cincinnati. Joey Votto got called up right before, right after Labor Day, and then Norris was still with the Reds in 2008, and that was the year that Ken Griffey Jr. got traded. Right after the trade deadline, right around the trade deadline. So there you go, Norris Hopper. Thanks to everybody, the dozens of you who played. And we'll play again tomorrow. Whether you like it or not. By the way, our guy Eric wins a Skyline Chili gift card just in time for National Chili Day tomorrow. Celebrate at your neighborhood Skyline. When it's National Chili Day, it is Skyline time. When it's time to play Who's Bad Is That, it is, whether you like it or not, it's also Skyline time. All right, very good. The deal was, Taryn, because we like to make it, you know, gradually more and more difficult. It took us about an hour to find somebody who could correctly guess that that was Norris Hopper's bat. But we're supposed to have one that's even more difficult tomorrow. And I'm not sure if we can do that. I'm not even sure we right now should do that.
Carry it over to Rapine, then.
Let me tell you something. I can promise you, James Rapine, who's filling in on Friday, would rather take 3 hours of phone calls from people laughing at him about John Ross than play Who's Bad Is That? That is the exact opposite of the kind of show my guy James wants to do. My man has zero interest in playing Who's Bad Is That or Guess the Foot or really anything. So, but yeah, James is filling in on Friday. And frankly, I think to those who have endured Who's Bad Is That this week, that is a relief. It is 14 minutes away from 6. This is ESPN 1530 Cincinnati Sports Station.
We took an hour to see if somebody could guess a picture of a bat. It's happening in baseball.
Hey, don't forget, Cincy 360 is tomorrow at noon. Tony Pike. 2 hours. 2 hour show. Does Tony Pike play games? And then we're back at it tomorrow at 3:05. Chad Brendel, BearcatJournal.com, joins us every Thursday, 3:45. We will, of course, talk about tonight's Bearcat game. And I really, as sort of corny and as hokey as it might sound, I'm frankly more interested in how the Bearcats play today, and tonight, I should say, than really, frankly, how they played on Sunday. They were not going to beat Houston. They're not as good. They're not as talented. They're not as physical. They're not as big. They're not as experienced. Now, that maybe shouldn't add up to a 38-point defeat, but, you know, let's face it. A 38-point loss was probably the more likely outcome than a victory. UC was more likely to lose by 38 than they were to win by a point. So maybe it wasn't the most likely outcome, but more likely than them winning. Interested in how they bounce back against a team that right now, unlike the Cougars, is a peer, kind of right there in the soft middle, if you will, of the American Athletic Conference. You find out about coaches, you find out about teams when they have to bounce back. And I said this in the first hour of the show. What always sort of impressed me about Andy Dalton, despite his physical shortcomings as a quarterback and the lack of transcendent success, was right when, you know, he'd play a really bad game, and right when it felt like the walls were closing in and felt like, you know, the conversation was really going to ignite about replacing him or not bringing him back or how bad the contract was, he'd come back and play a really good game. Apples to oranges comparison, but I kind of believe that to be true here. I always thought those performances told us a lot about the guy, and I think you're going to get at least some degree of insight into the character of this team, the makeup of this team, and the quality of the head coach based on how they play tonight. They are two-point underdogs against Tulsa. For the Xavier Musketeers, I think the math is simple. I think win three of these next four, and they're going to be okay. Now, the big daunting challenge is the game against Creighton. The Providence game, you could look at it one of two ways, I guess. You could say, well, God, the first time they played, David Duke went nuts. They crushed it from three. Providence made 59% of the three-point shots and still couldn't win the game. The other part of that, though, is Xavier at home. Acknowledging that home court advantage is not what it usually is, Xavier at home struggled to beat a Providence team that had them beat. I mean, when you're up 7 with a buck 15, buck 14 to go, you're supposed to win that game. Providence did not. Xavier does. Colby Jones hits the shot. Great comeback by Xavier. I think Xavier's going to play well tonight. I think they're going to shoot better from three. It's interesting. For as much as we've crushed this team for the way they play defense against St. John's,
they're still allowing opponents to shoot just a tenth of a point over 40% from the field. So I don't think you want to place added emphasis on those games at the end of the year, and I don't think you want to place added emphasis on the game against Creighton, who's really, really good. So Xavier Providence tonight at the Dunkin' Donuts Center. That game will air on 55 KRC. Taryn, how are we on time here? Do we have time for a phone call? That's actually somebody who's going to want to talk about sports and stuff. Bob is calling from Florence. Sorry you missed out on Whose Bad Is That?
Man, Mo, I'll tell you what. I was able to listen for a little bit, but I was actually kind of torn away.
Bored? Oh.
Former Tar Heels basketball player Matt Doherty has a new sports talk show.
Yeah.
And he was doing a contest. Apparently he's gained some weight over the years. And he's doing a contest called Whose Fat Is Matt? And I was listening to that. And so I didn't have a chance to get in on yours.
Did you win?
No, I didn't. I didn't.
I understand.
He's up to 338. So
well, here's the good news. We're playing it again tomorrow, Bob. So
you are?
Yeah.
I'll be listening.
Thanks.
Thanks, Bob.
Really, how do you top that? It is 6 minutes away from 6 o'clock. This is ESPN 1530 Cincinnati Sports Station. All right, just got this. Saw a tweet from Adam Baum from the Cincinnati Enquirer, who covers the Musketeers. Brian Griffin is available tonight for the Muskies as they take on Providence this evening. Nate Johnson dealing with a leg injury, and Deontay Miles, who was a healthy scratch last time Xavier played the Friars. He is not going to go. Not that you were necessarily counting on him tonight, but Nate Johnson had four threes against the Friars in the first go-around, 14 points. Obviously hasn't shot the ball that well recently, 0-for-6 the other night against Butler, but still, they're a little less difficult to guard when he's not on the floor. So no Nate Johnson, no Deontay Miles for the Musketeers tonight. Brian Griffin is available. We have to go. Tony Pike has Cincy 360 at noon. I return tomorrow at 3:05. I'm looking forward to that. Thanks to you for listening. Thanks to all of you who played our little game, and thanks to Taryn for producing. Have a great night. This is ESPN 1530 Cincinnati Sports Station.